Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Midweek Takeaway. We're joined by Colin Bird. Welcome back to the podcast, Colin. How's life?
Not too bad, thank you. Pretty busy and left Dubai, as you know, a week or so ago. So I'm in more settled circumstances. Was in Namibia last week and now in South Africa, probably going back to Namibia and probably Lusaka as well. So very busy.
Okay, that's great to hear. So just talk us through how things are progressing, because obviously we've had quite a few updates of late from the various companies. Obviously, we saw an update from Kendrick regarding the rare earth project there in Namibia, as you just mentioned, Namibia. But just talk us through how things are progressing. Let's start with extract at Silver King. We saw the operations there sort of starting to come to fruition. So just talk us through how things are progressing.
That's right. Nice little position there at Silver King, because we've got, as you know, we've got exploration going on, large scale exploration, addressing a number of targets. Our exploration out with that Breccia pipe, which started it all off, has been successful. The copy that we drilled to be a core Breccia pipe showing itself above surface, multi-veined and quite a bit of drilling. We drilled north and south of that and we've got intersections, good intersections. I think when you go outside the Breccia pipe, you're looking at more normal type ore bodies, you know, around about 2%, with not often with silver in accompaniment sometimes, not other times. So we're looking at quite a large strike, which has got to be drilled. We're going to employ some more geophysics. Of course, you know, it can be expensive. We don't want a wildcat. And it shows the tendency to be layered structures. And so the predictability is better defined with geophysics. And then we've got what we call the worm, which is that 3 kilometer feature, which has shown high magnetics and is obviously a target. And then back to the main mine. Everything's in place there. We've had 2 blasts and we're now blasting in ore, our next blast. Plant's ready, tailings dam's ready, housing for the guys is ready. We'll be loading up with reagents and it won't be long before we put our first material through the plant. The idea is because, you know, we've reported in quite a few of our RNSs that there's this chalcocite, very rich chalcocite, even native copper. So there'll be some pre-selection, rudimentary pre-selection, prior to feeding through the flotation plant. But you'd never put 40% material chalcocite through the flotation plant. So we're putting in pre-sorting facilities, almost hand-picking is the best way of doing it. And that's it's direct shipping ore. So I'm very bullish on Silver King. Then, of course, we've got the antimony project up in Morocco. Again, another startup mine. And we'll be producing antimony, hopefully, in the first half. The Amgas mine really excites us. Of course, wherever we look, we come across more tunnels. Some of the tunnels, not so artisan. Some of the tunnels, quite sophisticated. And the French worked there many years ago. And you're seeing good quality mining, obviously by companies as opposed to artisans, and with actually exposures of that antimony within the tunnel and at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. But, you know, the more we look at it, we talk about that open pit, Amgas. It's not an open pit. It's more of a quarry face. And then we start doing our interpolation from galleries to the open face. And we're seeing a very huge potential now for open pit mining and not opening up the galleries. Because the difference between us and artisans and not so sophisticated miners is the fact that everybody was chasing these bands of antimony, sometimes as thick as your hand, sometimes half a meter thick, sometimes as thick as your finger. And of course, they drove the tunnels mining the very high grade stuff. Our approach is going to be entirely different because there's one sort of samples either side of this high grade antimony, and the breccias and rocks surrounding it contain 1, 2, 3%, 4%, 5% antimony. So we're able to take it in bulk, sort before we introduce it, very much as I was talking about at Silver King, before we introduce it to the flotation plant. We're pretty advanced with our defining the agreement to buy the plant. The plant is on its way. And so if you actually step back from extract in the first half, we're looking towards significant progress with bringing on an antimony mine in Morocco and a Silver King mine, copper silver in Zambia, together with exploration, which could change the face of Silver King. So all in all, we're pretty happy with what's going off in extract.
Yeah, I think you summed it up on the last RNS where you talked about the update on those antimony licenses, where you said that I think it was the presence of the mineralization, which is conducive to standard flotation recovery at both Angas and IGAUD, changes the dynamic of that project development, and the fact that you've now got a high degree of confidence to speed up the mine development based on access to a future revenue stream. So just talk us through, you mentioned there that the plant is on the way. How easy is it? Is it almost like a modular type system that you're going to put in place there for the flotation plant?
It's in seven containers.
Okay.
It is indeed. I wouldn't call it modular. I'd just call it small enough to be in transported in containers. So that's not going to be the journey of a lifetime to put that together site. So it's unlikely we run it with generators probably the first few months while the government, the local municipality or whoever it is makes the connection. As always, the lead time is the permits to mineral process and permits to mine, the two separate licenses. Mineral permitting.
Yeah, thanks for that answer, Colin. How are you, by the way? How's the 2026 treating you so far?
It's bloody well, the exit from Dubai I thought was a walk in the park, but we had Sylvia's parents with us and they were Serbian, so the chances of getting out were very, very limited. With a Serbian passport, you can't go anywhere, not even Serbia. So we had to get out. Dad got very, very sort of, he didn't want to bloody leave. He said, "I've come for 16 days holiday. I've seen war before. I'll see it again." So I had to persuade him, and it was very traumatic. So we had to get out by van, and then we said we got a truck to, well, a taxi to take us to the border. Then we got another one on the other side, pre-arranged, of course. Then we flew on a 737 to Athens, which had to go to Egypt, Kevin. It went to that posh place. What was it called? Beautiful in the sky, it looked. What's it called? Where the Germans fight.
Alamein.
We went there and fueled up, and then we flew to Athens, and from Athens to Frankfurt. And then I went off down to Namibia, so we came here to South Africa. Now I'm in South Africa, having spent a week in Namibia. So it's been pretty hectic.
Yeah, pretty well. It's been a hectic year. I mean, I've got a couple of friends who are currently buying Abai, and they're finding it's a bit of a buyer's market the past few days.
Oh, and it's going to be more so. I would think twice before I did it because, somebody said to me, let's go in. There's going to be tremendous opportunities. And I said, so you can buy a decent apartment now, I bet, for $500,000. So I said to them, would you walk in a casino, black, red, or odds even? I
Well, I
says,
guess.
that's the level of it. Don't call it an investment, call it a gamble.
Well, we'll see, won't we? Anyway, moving on. With Extract, just finishing up on that portfolio company. In terms of a production and revenue, do you think next quarter we might see some cash flow coming in through Silver King?
Well, we penciled it in as a company internally. That's our ambitions. Yes, indeed.
Perfect, perfect, wonderful. Okay, so moving on to Bazan, we saw the NL ZM mining license was renewed, which is fantastic news. I think there was any doubt that was going to happen anyway, but it's nice to have that box ticked. But we also saw the appointment of a mining and logistics contractor, Unitrans Namibia. Can you, tell us a little bit about Unitrans for people who may not know who they are, and where the project is at the moment.
Well, first of all, addressing the Unitrans, they're one of the largest companies in South Africa with a branch in Namibia, offering the sort of services that we need. I argue that we could have gone down market, but in actual fact, I think it's better to do everything as you'd like, do it professionally, and do it with the best companies who've done it before. And so, Unitrans, we're quite pleased that they agreed to work with us, and that I feel that over the negotiation period, that they got to know the project very well. And,
Well,
I've got.
it feels to me like they agreed to work with you because they're hoping to have significantly more work for the larger resource as you go do the exploring and find more copper. They're hoping for a multi-decade partnership potentially, if it all goes to plan.
You've got it in a nutshell. They're the sort of company, not a small company who's sort of planning next year. They're a company who's taking a long-term view, and so they're under no doubt that phase one being a success, they'll be in pole position for phase two. And obviously, the Namibia as a country is more and more mining is likely to take place. It's very, very active. And I think they want their presence in Namibia is they want to grow their presence in Namibia. So quite a few boxes ticked on their side. But during the tender process and the work process and discussions and debates, they're more almost living the mining with us. And so so we're very pleased to have the board and very pleased to finalise the contract. And of course, they're doing the transport of the ore from the pre-sorter to NLZM. Whilst we haven't finalised it, they'll probably be transporting the concentrate to Walvis Bay. So in no small way, pulling a figure from the sky, they're into about 78% of all the work commitment. Most contractors are much smaller than they are, and they represent our key partner in this endeavour.
Yeah, it's institutional validation of a kind, because while yes, you know, obviously they work for money, they have a pick of projects, Unitrans, and they could choose to work with anybody. They've chosen to work with you, which I think does indicate, that validation of the quality of Hope and Garb in a way that perhaps nothing else can. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would. And it's rather strange when you're talking about your contractor choosing you. But there is an element of that, Charles, that they're not going to work with anybody. They've got a reputation which is bigger than us, that they've got to protect in Southern Africa. So you're absolutely right. It validates and puts credibility to what we're doing, what we're about, and our approach to the Open Garrett project. I could agree. Say it sounds somewhat bizarre, the contractor selects the...
It is what it is, right? I mean, if Unitrans goes and works with a number of companies and then, it doesn't work out, or they don't generate profits, or the mine fails, and this happens, more than often, then they'll probably struggle to find contractor work. So it is a two-way street. It is the way I've always seen it. But in terms of, what's actually going on site, potential revenue, potential profits. I mean, we were talking about getting up and running, comfortably before the end of calendar 2026. Is that still the case in your mind?
Very confident, very, very confident. Everything's flat out on the ground. Everything's flat out in our internal objectives. You could argue we've lost a week, but it is as tight as that. Rest assured, Charles, a day doesn't go by, because I think I get on everybody's nerves now. A day doesn't go by where we check the money, what we spent, we check the money, we check the activity relative to the money, and we check the progress to find out just where we are, where we're exposed, where we're not exposed. Keep checking up on delivery of certain items, and I don't think we're letting anything slip and taking absolutely nothing for granted.
Are you considering hedging copper, gold, oil prices potentially as well, as you get closer to production? Because oil is obviously racing ahead because of what's going on.
We'll do the standard offtake agreement where we're actually paid for our metal, and we won't in some basis for our metal after certain deductions, the gold, and they pay for the silver as well as the of course. And I very much doubt whether they would be open to hedging within an offtake contract. They may or may not do hedging, but by Jove, in the world we're in, but quite easy to get caught with your pants down, I think.
Yeah, indeed. And in terms of when you get paid, is it when it leaves Hope and Garb, or when it leaves NLZM, or when it gets to the port?
When we drop it on the pad at Walvis Bay, we get paid a good chunk of our money, and then you take samples, you agree, and then if there's a certain deviation, of course, you both sample, referee and umpires, and there's a standard procedure, and whoever's the furthest out pays the cost of the additional sampling, assay, and what have you. So it's pretty standard work. So in cash flow terms, we haven't got a three-month pipeline. We'll have 90% of our money pretty soon.
Do you plan to be in the truck driving the first shipload to the port? Or
I wanted to be. Unitrans wouldn't let me. The trucks to the port won't be so big, because by the time you get it to concentrate, of course, everything has been reduced. And the trucks which are going across, believe it or not, from the pre-sorter from the ore sorter to the LLZM, they're 50 tonners. They're big boys.
But I don't know. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because this asset, Hope and Garb, has been in Bazan for a very long period of time. We're finally getting to a point now where we're going to monetize it. It must be, obviously, it's very hard work, but it also must be quite exciting watching everything getting built, keeping everything on track. And I don't know, I mean, a lot of people get to sort of this part stage of the journey, and rather than excitement, they just feel tired. I mean, how are you feeling at the moment as we're going through the mine bill?
Well, I spent my life as a mining business, as a mine manager in the BCL nickel copper mine. I basically undertook a massive project that was the 1,300-meter shaft railway line over 24 kilometers, the opening up of a new copper mine where the shaft had been driven. No newcomer to projects, large and, well, generally much larger than this. But I have to say, it's a bit like going on stage. You know, I know Billy, you know, Billy Connolly would tell you, every time he went on, he was scared to death. Mm. And only when he got on, the words come out, and some of the words didn't come out as he wanted. It's not so very different. You, at this stage in the game, you see, you've got to be careful. You've got to see the gremlins, because that's what you're paid for. But at the same time, don't go over gremlin. So, and don't get overexcited if you think you're in front, if you've made a few bobs saving here and there. Because think, you know, the tide can turn very quickly. As
it'll give it back to you. Yeah, it takes it back, doesn't it?
It takes it back. So I think, you know, the fat lady singing is an appropriate remark. And don't count your money when you're sitting at a table. Wait till the dealing's done. You'll Kenny Rogers song as
well. Well, this is why, I mean, the various mine builds I've seen, that there's always something goes wrong, mildly wrong, when you're building, right? And it really, the only question is, how wrong does it go? And it's only when you first get paid from that first shipment that it feels real to me, which probably explains the valuation gap between the market capitalization and the potential revenue. But once you are up and running and revenue producing, I mean, the payback time for the mine build for NLZ, for, you know, the entire company, is very rapid. I think you'd agree that we're still very undervalued here.
Oh, it's gross value. And you talked about excitement earlier. You can't imagine how excited I will be to see that first truck being filled with concentrate. Mm. In fact, to see the first truck leaving the mine will be extremely exciting. To see the first truck full of ore being taken to the ore sorter, I'll be excited. To see that machine, which I keep watching the film of the machine, and I never cease to be impressed by how those ore sorters chuck this stuff out. You know, it really is impressive. So, as you say, while there's a bit of fingernail biting, there's a lot of potential excitement and excitement in this process.
Fantastic.
So, Colin, regarding the Bazant thing, the financing is on track. It's coming.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Can you give us any more colour, or are you not able to at this stage?
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, I think people are just fed up of hearing from me. I see it on the bulletin boards. You know, how long does it take to negotiate a contract like this? You know, you're not blind buying 6380s. You know, when companies got protocols, big, you know, the company we're dealing with in particular, very professional, and their way of approaching life, they don't change protocol for size of deal. And way back in my career, when head of Costain Mining, we adopted the same philosophy. We were doing some really big construction jobs in the Middle East, but one didn't change the protocol and the business approach because of the size of the tap to build the project. So the company we're dealing with is exactly the same. This is the way we work, and this is the way we work. And we have to respect that. And quite frankly, if we don't, they wouldn't be around anyway. So we do respect it. But I'm confident that we're getting to where we want to be, where they want to be, of course, as well. And that ought to be concluded in the not-too-distant future. Having said that, the marketplace has turned so rapidly that one is never sitting on one's nerves saying, we can't finance that, this project. But, you know, we've gone this far with this group and developed a very good relationship with them, and we're very hopeful of a conclusion.
So, same part of the world then. Tell us a little bit about African Pioneer.
Well, African Pioneer, I guess I'd just say is 6 months to a year behind. The rig will be shortly mobilised, and we'll be drilling on the island. We're drilling that first, just because we like the idea of testing. We feel the past drilling hasn't been properly designed. Goldfields went deeper instead of shallow for some reason, so we think we can find near surface ore to add to our pit. We feel that we can find ore which has got more gold in it than Ongombo. We feel that we can increase the amount of ore which will be available for open pit mining at Ongombo, hopefully Ongiama as well. There are definite gaps in the ore resource statement where we want to fill in. And it's always been classed as chutes, and we want to test what's in between the chutes, because we're not convinced that that it's barren chute. We're actually of the opinion that there's an opportunity to fill in the voids and make the ore body even bigger. You know, it's about 29 million tons now, 30 million tons. And we've got 1,000 tons of contained copper with gold. Nobody bothered to check for gold. So, like open, similar story to Open Gorup. We're not absolutely sure of the gold values, but looked like 0.35, 0.45. So nice addition of gold. So what we've got to do now is increase the quality, improve the quality of the ore resource. We've got to know whether Angarma is going to make a contribution to the ore story. And we've got to do our mine planning and design the plant, etc. Got a lot of interest in supporting us to build the plant. So we're pretty confident on that side. We are making good progress with probably acquisitions of units in the area, which will allow us to fast track because in the one case, we won't have to build the plant if it was to mature. In the other case, we add significant resources to the base case where the gold values are higher and the copper values are higher. So whilst we're doing this basic work to get Ongombo into production, Ongombo stands alone as it is, but there's many peripheral opportunities around Ongombo that we're exploring concurrently.
So, Colin, thanks for that. Moving on now to Kendrick. I want to talk a little bit about this drill hole, this historical drill calls that you sent off, say, because TWD-001, that result was just exceptional. The headline intercept, 8.14% TREO over 21 meters from around 60 meters depth. That's world-class, and it's comparable, as you said in the RNS, to other world-class assets worldwide. Did you believe when you acquired this rare earth project that's the kind of result you were going to initially have come back, or was it a surprise to you?
Didn't surprise us. I think a better word is pleased.
Mm.
Did we expect it? As you walk around the area, the rare earths are visible because, you know, a lot of we talk about these cones, and there's a scientific technical report on the internet there you'll find by, I think it was Palmer and Marlow, which also talks about cones. It's a pretty good description. Kind of ice cream cone outcrops there, and which everybody expects to go below ground. So there you are. It's on surface. It's in your face, so to speak. So we knew we had good rare earths. We knew we got stacks of trenches, all which showed good rare earths. But, of course, none of it was our assays. And, you know, our own XRFs would have supported it. But there's nothing like the lab. And we use this lab in Ireland, which is rated as the best in the world. And the samples are being sent off to the US as well to be actually tested right from ground roots, mineralogical, and every single aspect to see how the rare earth rocks, any encapsulation, all of those things. Did we expect it? Yes. Still, again, when we talk about Open Gorup, you're still biting your fingernails to the result back. Do I like 20% at 8%? 8%, gee whiz, 8.14%, 21.6 meters, I think it is. That was really very, very nice. And the rest of it is too. What have we got to do now? I think the one of the key issues here is that the intersections at the bottom of the hole were still in 6% rare earths.
Mm.
So this hole was, you know, you might go 5 meters and it backs up. You might go another 50 meters and it backs up. Well, who knows?
But
that all wasn't finished. And the results are quite outstanding. What we've got.
Mm.
We intend, you know, the proper way to approach one of these things is to understand the lithology. So don't just drill for rare earths. How did they occur? How did they dip? What attitude did they dip? Which is the structural direction? In fact, are they structurally controlled? They're appearing to be like sheets. So we're expecting below the ground there, we're expecting to find sheets of this stuff. We're expecting it to be possibly flat lying. There are a number of these cones. So we're flying a drone to actually get some feel of tonnage. Because if we go back to that chart that we produced in RNS, certainly in grade, there's no doubt whatsoever is the charts. We're up there among the top.
In grade, I mean, even the NDPR grade, 1%, that pretty much exactly matches Mountain Pass. Right in the US, and it's only just behind Meld. So in terms of grade, you couldn't get better. It's about, you know, processability and resource tonnage.
Let's take those things in order. It's about tonnage initially, and you notice those tonnages were not huge. You've not got to make it hundreds of millions of tons, but we feel between the two deposits, we will in actual fact come up with greater tonnage than that peer group. We stand a very, very, very good chance coming up with a greater tonnage. but we'll definitely, I feel very, very confident we'll come up with an equal tonnage at worst case, but I'm optimistic for more tonnage. Now let's look at processability. Shouldn't be taken lightly, Charles. Shouldn't be taken
especially
lightly.
Especially with rare earths.
Especially with rare earths. You into every aspect of process, ion exchange, precipitation, you name it, as well as standard techniques like crushing, grinding, flotation. You're into every aspect of a process technology. The interesting bit, which again has been confirmed, is that the thorium-uranium levels very low, which is somewhat unusual for a carbonatite. Because let's face it, you know, as you concentrate the rare earth rate, but if you've got uranium and thorium around, you concentrate that too, which makes the handling aspects of it and the waste storage aspects of it makes it very difficult if you're very, very high in uranium and associated thorium. So that's not going to be a problem. We're doing this work on already separation, and previous work indicated that it's separated reasonably. So we might just be looking at a fine grind here, which I'm absolutely sure will be necessary, a fine grind, pretty standard flotation. Obviously, whatever uranium there is there and thorium will be depressing. And I'm sure we'll get, well, I'm fairly confident at this stage, we'll get a not too complex rare earth circuit to get to the rare earth exercise, to oxide concentrate. But look at the position, Charles. I mean, this is what excites me, what really excites me. 50-odd kilometres from deep water. We think a big deposit. Look around, where are the refineries? So if the big boys are looking now at us, and my tonnage protestations are right, and we can deliver a rare earth oxide 60 kilometres from our deep water port, what a place to build a refinery.
Indeed.
So if I was American, I've made a business of looking at the disposition of refineries around the world. And Ludovic's refinery would be in the optimum position to serve Sudica and other places too, with a refinery for their rare earth oxides. Because let's face it, you look at that list, Charles, they're not big tonnages. No. And anybody who makes that big decision to build a refinery is probably a $1.5 billion decision. Mm. To have a deposit 60 kilometers away, which can give you 70% of your feed, your refinery, makes that investment decision, that capex decision, very easy. So I think the combination of refinery plus Bonya, the Kendrick asset, the rare earth, the two licenses, I think the combination of refinery and tonnage and grade makes a refinery compelling and in a wonderful position to justify a refinery. And I think that should make it more attractive to the West, who know that they have to have rare earth capacity and capability. You know, in America, they've got very low capability of rare earths. UK's got no capability. Europe's got limited. And so we're in pole position there, both with deposit and encouraging any incomer to build a refinery. So we're delighted. I mean, if you wanted, Charles, to place a deposit anywhere, could you think of one better?
Well,
in the desert next to a power line?
Well, it's also that in Namibia, and Namibia has always been a pretty decent jurisdiction in Africa, just generally. But you've also got the hydrocarbon boom off the coast, and more infrastructure is being built out there as well. So when you're trying to attract a major, I mean, is there a better country to go build a mine in at the moment in Africa in terms of infrastructure? I mean, maybe South Africa, but that's probably it. I mean, would you agree with that as well?
Well, I think we're better, you know, I'm very keen on South Africa. I'm sitting in South Africa at the moment.
Mm.
But, you know, you will generally be landlocked, and the route to coast is not easy. And Durban is pretty full, and Richards Bay is pretty full and having its problems. So Ludovic, is basically just absolutely ready. I'd sooner start off if I was, the type of company what was going to build a refinery, I sort of start off with a clean sheet of paper.
Mm.
And a clean sheet of paper is Namibia, I've got no doubt about it. What's deep water port, the access, the power lines.
Could you justify a railway potentially from the mine to the port in the future, or is that too far?
Would you need one when you talk about rare earth concentrates?
Mm.
I mean, let's put it in perspective, Charles, and something we don't talk about, but just as a bit of entertainment over the weekend to You know, I looked at equivalent levels. What are we looking at here, you know? You're probably talking about 15 grams of gold. Probably talking about 25% of copper. I mean, the dollar value per ton of concentrate is huge. So I don't think you need too much sophistication to truck 60 kilometers. 50 trucks, which have got a value of $2,500 per ton of concentrate in, you know, it's a, you know the business model is fairly compelling, and the payback is fairly compelling. So I think the final refinement of a railway to Lüderitz is probably not necessary.
Not necessary. Okay, and then you know, final question for me on this. Speaking for a while now. In terms of where you see the rare earths going in Kendrick, are you hoping for a trade sale of the project later this year, or a joint venture, or are we going down the resource definition and feasibility studies route within the company itself? Do you have a preference, or are you open to all comers?
Well, life has taught me that joint venture, there's only one winner, and that's the joint venture's in. So unless it's something changes, that's not a preferred exit. To walk around with a for sale sign after you've only been in the company a month is also, it's cheap, and it's not the sort of thing I would do. One's always receptive in a very hot market for rare earths, for approaches, and we know the strategic interest, and of course we'd entertain offers should they come at the right size. What I've found very, very much in this, the best way of working at our level is control those things you can control. What can we control? It's drill for more verification, do more and more process work, starting at the absolute basic and progressing our way through, building up community relationships, and just getting on with the artwork. But in this particular case, Charles, get on with it fast. We're going to take a second machine down there. We're going to drill the socks off that as fast as we possibly can, because we think we're onto the biggest rare earth. I'm you know, Colin's being Colin, and I hope that you're not going to take this as an outrageous statement, but I do agree that we're up there among the top three undeveloped projects in the world. And the more I see, the more relaxed I get about that comment, the more relaxed I get about it, yes, the comment. So what can we get? What can we do to improve that position? Improve that position. Drill, drill, drill. And that's exactly what we're going to do. Mm. But we're not going to sort of sequentially look at the metallurgy, which people do. We're into metallurgy as we sit here now. We're into metallurgy at the same rate of activity as we are the drilling. So I'm sure, you know, if we continue to repeat these results, it's just what the West wants. As I've said, I think it's strategically well situated for a refinery. It's a total package case. And I don't think we need to go out there. I think the suitors will come.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they will too. In terms of assessing metallurgy process, all of the fun rare earth stuff, Is this something you're doing in-house, or something you're potentially looking at? Obviously, some of it's being sent to the US, but is it basically third-party validation what you're after as well?
No, take this as, I hope the market doesn't and the listeners don't take this wrong, but I don't think there's many junior mining companies with the in-house expertise to do this, Charles, and that's what we're doing at the moment. Every aspect of this project, even geology, standing on the rig, basic metallurgy. We're using the US universities. We're importing the specialist, the flow sheet designers, specialists. And I'd be surprised if there's any junior or major for that matter who's got total in-house capability to progress and assess a project of this nature. So the answer is no. Recruited everybody we need to recruit in order to get this into pre-feasibility study. They're already on our books or signed up to come on our books or engaged as external professionals.
Beautiful. Okay, thank you, Colin. Cheers.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks, Charles. Always too nice to talk to you.
I'll say, you Colin Bird, thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Phil.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net